Black 47.
Sammy said, I think I'll split, dig some ditches for a bit. London ladies, they be waiting, try my hand at emigrating. No,
and The Leisure Class.
I promised to quit watching TV and read a book. I promise to take care and not drag you down too.
The WBAI Full Moon Benefit takes place at the Lone Star Roadhouse on West 52nd Street between Broadway and 8th Avenue. Tickets are $15 in advance and $20 the night of the show. This is your chance to support WBAI and have a great time while doing it. This Monday, June 15th at 9 p.m., call the Lone Star Roadhouse for ticket information at 245-2950. That's 245-2950. It's the WBAI Full Moon Benefit.
I promise finger sandwiches and ginger snaps. I promise cockle shells and heart attacks. I promise you car fare there and back.
Be sure it's true when you say I love you. It's a sin to tell a lie.
If you made a pledge to WBAI during the last marathon and still haven't honored it, take a moment to do it right now. Mail your check along with your pledge form or name, address, and telephone number on a separate sheet of paper to WBAI Pacifica 12345 Church Street Station, New York, New York 10249.
If you break my heart, I'll die. Be sure it's true when you say I love you. It's a sin to tell a lie.
And there are a whole lot more sins than telling lies, but we'll get into that a little bit later. You're listening to WBAI in New York. It's time for Off the Hook. Well, they say education is the spice of life. I don't know if they actually say that, but they say something similar. And tonight we're going to be educating people that want to be educated as well as people that probably don't want to be educated. But that's how education works. It's the kind of thing where knowledge seeps in. And we have all kinds of knowledge to seep in your general direction. First, though, some rather disturbing news items in the world of high tech and freedom of speech and that kind of thing. And, of course, later on in the program, we will be taking your phone calls at 212-279-3400. As we always do on this program, Off the Hook, every Wednesday night from 9 to 10. Good evening, I'm Emmanuel Goldstein, and we've got some controversial items tonight. This is something that has just occurred. The details are still coming in. Hopefully, in weeks to come, we will have more information on this. Comes out of the Boston area, a venerable institution in the gay bulletin board community has been silenced. It's a bulletin board known as Doug's Den. It's one of the first gay-owned and operated BBS services. It was raided on June 6th by the FBI in what is described as a witch hunt designed to find child pornography. Now, this person posted to the Usenet. He's known as Jamie 12. It's the name that we're going to give him. He says, I know the charge to be false, as I know the man well whose board it is, or was, actually. Doug McKenzie is his handle here. Nobody under 18 was admitted onto the bulletin board. This sounds very similar to a case that we had a couple of months ago on this particular radio program out of California, where a person had his bulletin board and a bunch of other computers seized out of his home. His family was terrorized by police. And you might say, oh, that's a bit of an exaggeration, terrorized. I mean, they weren't beaten up or anything like that. They were simply searched and had all their personal equipment gone through and things like that. Well, that, my friends, is a definition of terror to me, because if you have your home entered into uninvited by people with guns, a lot of people can take that as terror, and a lot of people do. A lot of people don't like that, and it should not ever have to happen unless the person is really up to something bad. In that particular case, he was eventually vindicated, and hopefully we'll find out more about this particular case, and if it's a similar type of a thing, I hope to see some sparks fly as a result of this. Anyway, to continue with the story, nobody under 18 was admitted to the bulletin board, and any uploaded GIFs, those are basically picture files that you can download and then display on your particular computer, and bulletin boards have these, many different ones. Your favorite TV show might have a GIF that translates to a picture of one of the stars. Some of these other ones have adult-oriented GIFs, and I'm sure that's what was on this particular bulletin board. Any uploaded GIFs that looked even vaguely underage were immediately deleted from the system, that according to one of the users. Doug ran a clean operation. He recently ran afoul of a Boston attorney who wanted to buy him out, and when Doug refused his offer, the guy began a hateful campaign of harassment, threatening him with lawsuit upon lawsuit. He even went so far as to take out a trademark on the den name. Doug is many things, but a businessman isn't one of them, and he had never registered the name. So the wise guy lawyer opened a competing board with the exact same name in the same small community. Sheer spitefulness. Speculation exists that this guy dropped a dime on Doug in the proper legal circles, and that today's events are the result. He stands to lose not only the board, but his career. Apparently he's also in the military, and they say the military doesn't take kindly to accusations of this kind, no matter how unwarranted they may be. The other guy gets a clear marketplace and a front row seat in hell if the speculation is true. In any event, Doug is devastated. He's among the most honorable people I have known, and for this to happen is an unmitigated disaster. He will need a lot of support, and we'll, of course, be giving information on that if we can get through to some people on future editions of this program. Again, this is, according to this posting, this is too grave an issue to ignore. If the FBI can just swoop in and seize someone's gear on a false charge, who knows what could happen to any one of us on the Internet with a little creative bending of the sodomy laws in some states. If anyone out there would like to organize a campaign to help this particular person, this particular bulletin board that has been seized and shut down, certainly speak out against it. Speak out about whatever it is you can. Send us information here at WBAI, and if you want to be put in touch with other people, feel free to do that. I know one internet address where this is being discussed. Actually, a couple of different places. A Usenet group known as SOC.MOTS, SOC.MOTSS, stands for Members of the Same Sex, and a lot of gay issues are discussed there. Also, an internet mail address, if I can find the exact address, I want to make sure I give it out right. Okay, qn@ queernet, QUERNET.org. I know they're discussing this issue quite a bit there. So those are two places to go to get information if you're already hooked into the network. If not, it's a bit harder right now. You'll have to rely on all kinds of tabloid news reports. But we'll keep you informed on this particular program. This is from somebody else on the Internet who said, I did some digging on America Online and confirmed that Doug's Den BBS in Boston has been shut down by the FBI. This is truly a nightmare, and I think we should try to organize some kind of campaign. This is one of the most sickening civil rights violations I've heard of in a long time. And a post from the SOC.MOTS news group. Jesus, this explains a lot if the board is Doug's den. I wouldn't be surprised if the FBI was pulling some sort of vital evidence BS in order to harass a gay bulletin board. Even if the BBS isn't Doug's den, then I can see how the climate in Boston might lend itself to a witch hunt. After all, the mayor of Boston is trying to ban a squirt gun right now as a dangerous weapon. With leaders like that, anything is possible. And finally, on this particular subject, a posting from another person on the internet. My first inclination is to make a stink, but I'm going to wait until Doug says that's okay to do so. I didn't want to make a bad situation worse yet. It's a police state. It makes me ill. That's all the information we have. That's literally everything we have. And we'll be following this in future shows, so stay tuned to Off the Hook for updates on that particular situation regarding the seizure of a bulletin board in Boston. For once, not involving computer hackers, but you can see it's only one step away from computer hackers to something else. And that something else could be a lot more dangerous as far as issues of freedom of speech and that kind of thing. Okay, some interesting items as far as telephone and computer foul-ups and high technology in general, and just how high tech it really is. Stay tuned. Well, we have a computer that's being blamed for a problem with a Pepsi contest in the Philippines. That's right, 500,000 Pepsi bottle caps turned into $38,000 winners. That's right, 500,000. You do the multiplication, and it comes out to a loss for even the biggest of companies. This came in the Wall Street Journal. PepsiCo's Philippine bottling franchise has had a promotion with numbers printed in the bottle cap. A winning number was supposed to pay off up to $38,000, but a quote-unquote computer glitch was blamed for number 349 being announced as the winning number, even though that number appeared on 500,000 bottle caps. Several thousand people accepted PepsiCo's offer of $19 to each winner, but about 4,000 people are seeking governmental action for fraud. Well, what would you do? You know, this could be your one chance to win a contest, and they want to take it away from you. It's also interesting how whenever something like this happens, it's always blamed on a computer error. It wasn't our fault, the computer did it. And obviously somebody had to program the computer in the first place. But no need getting into all that. How about this, if we're interested in computer errors? Is anyone with a given name and date of birth who lives in the same county necessarily the same person? That is what the Santa Clara County in California voter registration computer believes, as reported in a recent edition of the San Jose Mercury News. John P. Taylor, a San Jose patent lawyer, has voted in every election since 1979, but he didn't receive his voting materials in the mail this year, even though his wife, two sons, and daughter did. On checking with the registrar of voters, he discovered that another John P. Taylor, who happened to have the same date of birth, had recently registered in nearby Sunnyvale. Both were born on Christmas Day 56 years ago. Now, the computer knew that a person with the same name and date of birth was the same person, and so treated the transaction as a change of address. The computer records showed different places of birth, but it apparently wasn't programmed to check that. While county authorities scratched their heads over this improbable event, and what to do about it. The disenfranchised John P. Taylor telephoned the other John P. Taylor and worked out a quick fix. It seems that their middle names are Paul and Philip, so they agreed to re-register with their full names. Well, that's a happy ending to that particular story, but of course, the person affected had to do all the work. And the people in charge, as usual, had no idea what was going on. But that's nothing compared to Claudia Braun of Indianapolis, according to the Associated Press. She's only 9 months old, but already her credit rating is shot. Indiana University Medical Center computers show that the youthful Miss Braun has run up bills of more than $3,000 for medical services, including pregnancy tests and dental care. Since late last year, the baby and her parents, Jean and Thomas Braun, have received about 15 bills, all for services rendered to people they don't know. Each bill listed Claudia as the person responsible for ensuring it got paid. I'd love to see them take me to court and have me carry her into court and say, "Hi, this is Miss Claudia Braun," said Thomas Braun. "It's hilarious when you think about it, but it's getting to be an old joke," added Mrs. Braun, who's a registered nurse at Wishart Memorial Hospital. Robert D. Whaling, Associate Director of Fiscal Affairs at the Medical Center, said the problem began when Claudia entered the world without a Social Security number. The university's computer program, which had just been installed, registered Claudia as 000-00-0000. Later, when other patients who didn't know their Social Security numbers were entered, they got the same exact Social Security number, all zeros. The computer decided that all the patients with the zeros must be related, and they put Claudia in charge of paying the bills. At last count, there were 37 patients linked to Claudia's account. Medical Center officials thought they had the Braun problem fixed in February and sent the family a letter of apology, but the computer then spit out 7 more bills. New computer software was installed recently that Whaling said should eliminate the problem. We're sorry it happened. This should not happen again. From the Federal Employees News Digest of May 18th, and this is interesting, an employee who forgot to type a 2-character code when accessing a computer at work was given unauthorized access to a check-generating program. According to the Merit Systems Protection Board, he should not have been disciplined for the mistake. The problem began when an Army depot switched certain information from a mainframe computer to mini computers. When the employee tried to access his normal work-related files, he ran into problems and inadvertently created a file listing banks and companies that were to get checks over $1 million. The checks, of course, were never generated. They're not quite that bad. But the interesting thing about that story is the person using the computer system was expected to hit a 2-letter code in order to restrict access on his account. In other words, if he didn't enter the 2-digit code, he would have full access. So it's kind of a reverse use of passwords there, where you enter a password to restrict your use, and if you don't enter the password, you get full access. But then again, it's the military, so I don't know what people expect. Well, from the Indianapolis Star, if you think you had trouble dealing with apathetic bureaucrats, meet Eugene Smith of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. The healthy 33-year-old has spent the past 2.5 years convincing authorities he's not dead. A frustrating error cost him his driver's license and his job. He still can't get a license, and he's still fighting 9 traffic violations that he says aren't his. Smith traces the trouble to the theft of his wallet in 1988. He believes the thief used his driver's license, racked up violations that led to the license suspension, and then died in a traffic accident. Now, in February 1990, a police officer stopped Smith and told him his car registration was expired and that state computer records showed he was dead. He said, "I was dead, and because of that, I was not allowed to drive," said Smith. "I agree that it would be a hazard for a dead person to be driving." Life isn't easy for an officially dead man. Without a license, Smith lost his job as a driver for a warehouse. Without that job, he had to find a cheaper place to live and take a job nearby at a deli. Being an officially dead taxpayer, no one in the state capitol took him seriously. I would call and I would hear them say, "Oh, this is that guy again." I could hear them laugh and they would say, "Nobody there could help me." Finally, Susan Rackus, an aide to Democratic U.S. Representative Peter Kostmeyer, took his case and persuaded the state motor vehicle agency to resurrect Smith. But Smith can't get a license. He's still accused of a string of years-old traffic violations. Said Rick Schoen, State Transportation Department spokesman, obviously, we dropped the ball on this. We were talking about Star 6-9 on telephones over the last couple of weeks. Star 6-9 is a service that allows you to return a phone call to the last person that called your line. Not necessarily the last person who spoke to you, the last person who rang your number. You can call them back with Star 6-9. Now, officially, New York Telephone does not offer this service. However, it is working in many parts of New York Telephone area, so you might want to check it out if you have not already and you're in their particular calling area. It does work in New Jersey. It works in various other parts of the country. But here's something about Star 6-7. Star 6-7 supposedly toggles caller ID blocking. Now, Bob Frankston writes in the Risks Digest on June 4th, there's been a discussion going on in the telecom forum about Star 6-7, which toggles the caller ID blocking state of a phone line, at least in those areas with caller ID blocking. But basically what that does is it either turns your caller ID on or turns it off. Now, the rationale for requiring caller ID blocking in some states is that there are situations where disclosing one's location might be life-threatening, as in the case of a shelter for battered women, or maybe a protected witness, or any number of such things. And there are also normal privacy considerations, which, of course, we're rapidly losing sight of. If one always was sure of the default state of the line one was using, a toggle might work. But there is no way to determine the state beyond faith that the telco's computer is exactly synchronized with one's expectations and that one is using the assumed central office lines on multi-line systems. Now, if you're a visitor, all bets are off. As from plain errors made in the business office or at the central office, one reader pointed out that some switches reloading the software loses the settings. Basically, that's every time they reload, they go back to the default. Another reader pointed out that Star 6-7 isn't an accident, but the specified behavior. The stupidity here is obvious. I'm more puzzled about how it came about. I generally lean towards incompetence as an explanation rather than conspiracy, but since some of the rationale for requiring caller ID comes from public safety considerations, I'm surprised that no one has challenged this approach as failing to satisfy this requirement. And by providing the illusion of caller ID blocking might actually increase the risk. Basically, Star 6-7 either turns it on or turns it off. But if you don't know if it's on or off, all you're going to do is switch it one way or the other. Most amazing there. I don't know where they think up these things. All right, we have one other very amusing story, and then we're going to be doing a demonstration and taking some phone calls as well. I'd like to also advise people that that there's a New York Telephone rate increase on the books, and we'll be getting more into detail on that next week. We'll have some expert guests on the telephone and perhaps in the studio. But basically, what the phone company is planning to do is raise rates as of July 3rd. Raising the statewide average residential bill by 60 cents a month. The basic monthly charge for message rate residential service would rise by $1.67. The current charge is $6.60, plus a $3.50 federally mandated fee. But one of the significant things about this rate increase is that they will be beginning to phase out the monthly charge for touch-tone service, something we've been talking about for quite some time here, and something we'll go into more detail in next week on this program. All right, finally, to wrap things up as far as the wonderful world of technology and computers, this comes from Canada, and one of the first applications of something a lot of you have expressed an interest in, that is voting by telephone. One day, perhaps, maybe, it might be possible for you to vote without ever leaving your house using a touch-tone phone, and this is the kind of thing that could happen. Some time ago, the Liberal Party of the province of Nova Scotia decided they'd use a high-tech voting system, fairly simple in structure. They would contract with the local telephone company, which is known as Maritime Tel and Tel, to use a phone-slash-computerized phone system so that people could vote from the main leadership convention here in Halifax, or from regional rallies where they had banks of phones installed, or from home using their touchtone phones. This is how it works. Each candidate gets a 900 number. It doesn't say here whether it costs something to call that 900 number. I would assume it didn't, but then again, one never knows. Each card-carrying Liberal would get a PIN, a special identification number, and instructions on how to use it. Come convention day, each Liberal could dial the number for the candidate of his or her choice. The candidate's recorded voice would state for whom that vote was about to be cast and request the Liberal to enter the PIN. After entering it, the candidate would thank the Liberal for his or her vote and hang up. Okay, voting was supposed to begin at 12:30 and take 90 minutes for the first round, and if necessary, several voting rounds could be cast during the day. Everything went wrong. Here's a chronology. 12:30, voting begins. However, voters do not get a thank you after entering their PIN. 12:35, confusion takes the throne and reigns for the rest of the day. Some telco representatives said that your vote was registered even if you didn't get a thank you. Others said that the votes were being counted. Don't worry. At 1 o'clock, voting was suspended while everyone worked everything out. At 1:40, the electoral officer announces that all votes will be canceled and that voting will begin again at 2:30. Then at 2 o'clock, a kid with a scanner called the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation to tell them that he had a recording of the party's conversation with the telephone company via a cellular phone. And that conversation gave the results so far. The CBC passes the report up their hierarchy, trying to decide if it's a faked report. The kid calls back 30 seconds later with the contents of their conversation with an executive producer, also by cellular phone. The CBC decides to run the story. At 2:30, voting begins again. Callers are instructed that unless they get the thank you message, their vote has not been counted. Some people get a thank you on the first try, others try for 20 or 30 times. In a desperate move, the telephone company cuts down on the number of circuits into the system to no avail. Voters now have busy signals as well as no acknowledgments to deal with. They report that the far-end phone either sends the thank you within a few seconds or does nothing for about 10 minutes before hanging up. At 3 o'clock, voting is extended until 4 o'clock. Many voters complain that their PIN is being rejected. Officials say, never mind, just try to vote again in that case. At 4 o'clock, less than half the conventioners have voted. Voting is extended until 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock, voting is extended until 6:30. At 5:30, reports begin arriving that members have been able to vote twice. At 6:30, the convention is called off. Ah, what went wrong? System design-wise, well, considering the PIN as a password, each member knew only his, and anyone who was able to guess your PIN could vote on your behalf. So the problems of PINs being rejected and voting twice could easily be explained as people making finger errors. If you made a mistake with your PIN, either you got someone else's number and voted for them, or you got rejected. No way to tell. If you later went back and used your correct PIN after having used someone else's, why, that would look a lot like being able to vote twice. And users couldn't, of course, change their PINs. Anyone with a programmable dialer could have voted for many, many Liberals if he knew the format of the PINs. Given the profoundly bad management we saw, I wouldn't be surprised to see them as six-digit numbers ranging from, say, 100,001 to 107,290. There were 7,289 registered voters. This prospect hasn't even been discussed yet in the local media. There was no backup voting system for this, the inaugural use of the system. The phone company convinced the party there was no need for it. The phone company reminded the party that it handles thousands, hundreds of thousands of calls a day. There was no possibility of the system failing. Operationally, there was either a bug in the voting software, or it was incapable of handling the volume of traffic, causing it to fail to say thank you most of the time. And of course, the kid with the scanner telling all just added icing to the cake. It was not a great day for the phone company or for the Liberal Party. There hasn't been any discussion of responsibility, but there sure will be next week. The convention cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it was entirely a wasted effort. And that posting came off the Risk Digest from Daniel McKay of Nova Scotia. CBC has reported there's now talk about having to run the entire campaign over again since the candidates who are listed as faring badly in the cellular telephone message are protesting that this disadvantages them in a new polling. A second campaign would severely drain the resources of the party and would put them at a disadvantage in subsequent elections. That pretty much wraps up our reports of computer technology and the wonders of modern society. Something to think about next time we consider electronic voting. Now, our phone lines are open at 212-279-3400 if anyone has questions or comments or experiences of their own. We're going to be demonstrating something that's rather interesting and a whole lot of fun in just a moment. We spend a lot of time talking about various ways of manipulating things. And it's always good to know how a certain system works if you're using it. And that extends to the phone company as well as any other computer system that is out there. Of course, the phone company is just one big, gigantic computer system. It has been for quite some time. Whether you use electromechanical relays or digital switches, it's all tied together from one corner of the globe to another. Now, what we're about to demonstrate here are a couple of the tones that we talk about, and we talk about quite a few of them over the course of several weeks here. We talk about people being able to blue box. We talk about people being able to red box. We talk about white boxes and rainbow boxes and all kinds of different boxes. And really what they refer to is just different kinds of tones that do different kinds of things. For instance, we're all familiar with touch tones. Now, touch tones are found almost everywhere. They're found on probably your telephone and certainly every payphone that's around. What do touch tones sound like? Well, that's a fairly easy question to answer. Here is a touch tone string. That's a very rapidly dialed touch tone string. And my compliments to anybody that can decode that. Touch tones are used by just about everybody in this country at some point. And, of course, while some phone companies like to charge fees for them, there really is nothing special about them. Not so with MF tones. MF tones are slightly different. Now, what we're going to do is play the same exact string of numbers. First with touch tones, and then with MF tones. Now, you might notice a slight difference there. MF tones were very commonly heard throughout the 60s and 70s, and anybody that was able to generate those particular tones and was able to seize long-distance trunk lines could route phone calls anywhere around the world using those and a couple of other interesting tones. Among them, the tone used most often to seize a long-distance trunk, the 2600 hertz tone. That's what it's all about. That particular tone would knock off the phone call that you were connected to and give you access to the actual machinery. And then, if you wanted to actually do something, you would you might have to route things around a little bit, and you would have to stick a tone known as KP in front of the phone number you were dialing and end it all with the start button, a start tone. So, in actuality, the number that you were trying to call would not sound like this, but would instead have those tones added to it and would sound like this. Notice the tone at the beginning and the final tone at the end that tells it to go ahead. No doubt you've heard those tones throughout your lifetime, in the distance as you make a long-distance phone call, and that is the actual mechanics of the system working. Of course, it's done differently now. It's not as easy to manipulate the system in that particular way, at least not in this country, but it is a lot easier than some people think to gain the knowledge and learn about it. So that's a little demonstration of the differences between touch tones and MF tones. Now, there are also, by the way, people that use MF tones are called blue boxers. That's what blue boxing is, using MF tones to route phone calls. A white box is the touch tone pad. Nothing more than a simple touch tone pad that makes simple touch tones. Blue boxes are MF tones. I know to a lot of people that probably sounds exactly the same, but there's a world of difference there. And of course, seizing the line, you use 2600 hertz. Ah, magic to my ears there. Okay, there is something else, something that I guess is more of a 1980s kind of a thing, and that is red boxing. Now, a lot of you, if you use payphones and put money into the payphones, you will hear special tones. Sometimes, a lot of times they're muted, but those tones basically tell the phone company that you have put in a quarter. What does it sound like? Does this sound familiar? That's the sound of a quarter going into a payphone. That's the sound of two quarters going into a payphone. Now, it's interesting that these tones are used. What's really, really interesting is that many payphones throughout the country still to this day only require the sound of those tones as the only confirmation that a quarter has indeed been placed into a phone. So you could actually walk up to a payphone and call a particular number, and when the lady, nice lady, asks you for money, you simply say, and you have a dollar in the phone, just like that. That's how easy it is. Unbelievable sometimes. The phone system is not this complex web that a lot of people make it out to be. It's quite simple to manipulate and learn from. Now, of course, just making free phone calls is only the simplest way of understanding how it all ties together, but it is important to know how things are accepted, what is listened for, what particular tones mean, what they sound like, and it is important to experiment with them and see just what is possible. Now, as far as using these particular tones, certainly with red box tones, a lot of people seem to think that it doesn't work because they try to call a payphone down the block and they simply make this sound and it doesn't do anything. And that's because a different kind of computer system is in use. When you make local phone calls, those particular tones are not really what's listened for. It's a different kind of a system, which I won't get into here because it would just get too complicated and I'd probably get a few key facts wrong anyway. But this mostly works on long-distance international calls, believe it or not. The easiest calls to make for free are the ones that are furthest away. It's one of those facts of phone company lore. And there is another set of tones that do various weird things. Some of them are error tones. Some of them are different kinds of things. On every touch tone keypad, you notice that there are, 12 buttons. But every touch tone keypad has the potential for more. And those numbers are known as silver box tones. That's right, silver box tones sound like this. Slightly higher pitched. And let's go down the dial there. Actually, probably not hitting the right keys here. Okay, I got it now. They sound like touch tones, and in fact they're very closely related to touch tones. And if you had an extra row of keys on your phone, one to the right of the 3, to the right of the 6, to the right of the 9, to the right of the pound sign, they would sound like this, in descending order. Those are the tones that used to be used on the Autobahn, the military phone system. They were also used in various instances on the phone network. At one point, you could call, and I still hear rumors that this is true. You could call long-distance information and hit the D key, which is the very bottom right hand next to the pound sign on your phone. And if you hit that for a couple of seconds, it would knock the operator, the long-distance information operator, off the line. You get a pulsating dial tone. And with that pulsating dial tone, you could hit single digits and go into various modes. For instance, loops. You could meet people on loops that way. You could get test numbers, switch rooms, things like that. And some of it may still work, some of it may not. The ABCD tones on the Silverbox can be used for anything. There could be phone systems that use these secret keys and use them because most people don't have access to them. So keep that in mind when you explore. All right, that's our lesson for today. That's our demonstration on the various magical tones out there. And the reason we do this is not to encourage people to engage in criminal activities. I'm sure I don't have to tell people that. It's to show people what's out there, what we're actually talking about. We mention these tones, we say what people do. It's important that we define our terms sometimes so that people know exactly what it is we're talking about. Okay, enough of this talking now. Let's take some phone calls, 212-279-3400, and see who's out there. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead, you're on.
Yeah, about the Star 5-7 and Star 6-9?
Right, Star 5-7 call trace, Star 6-9 call return, yes.
Right, Nassau County, Long Island, evidently it works. If you do the Star 5-7 within about, okay, the longest I've tried was about an hour after the call, you'll get a message recording that says the call, the last call to your number has been traced, and then it tells you the number of the annoyance call bureau to call up.
Are you saying that the recording comes an hour later?
No, I'm saying up to an hour after the call, the last call, if you wait.
Oh, I see. It's only up to an hour.
Yeah. Longer than that, I tried it once about, I'd say about 2 or 3 hours after the call, and then it said unable to trace the last call to your number.
Well, that sounds like a software setting to me, because obviously if you're able to return the call and it's the last call, it's being stored someplace. I imagine the reason they give an hour limit on that is because what person in their right mind would decide that somebody was harassing him 2 hours later?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure of the exact limit. I'm just saying these are the two... Those are the two variations that I tried.
Let me ask you something. How far away would it return a call to?
I don't know. I dialed up that number as well. You know, that last number.
Yeah.
And it does redial that number and calls it.
Uh-huh. But do you know if it's only in your local neighborhood, or could it be all of Long Island or New York State?
Oh, you mean where the call originated?
Right.
Yeah, that I don't know. I'll have to investigate further.
Okay, that's what we need to find out, see how big an area this encompasses.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, take it easy.
And that's good. The people are out there experimenting. Unfortunately, where I am, I can't experiment yet because I'm still on a mechanical crossbar system, but that's supposedly coming to an end real soon, and I'll be able to play around like everybody else. Now, interesting thing, a lot of people say Star 6-9, well, I don't have a touch-tone phone, so I can't do this. Well, there is hope for you people, because a star can be emulated by hitting what the phone company calls the 11 key. Now, there's no 11 key on your phone either, but if you dial 1169, it's the same thing as dialing star 69. So 1169, 1157, 11 anything. In fact, you can turn call waiting off by dialing 1170 instead of star 70 if you don't have a touch-tone phone, or if you just don't like using your touch-tone phone. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, Emmanuel Goldstein.
How you doing?
Eric Blair. Listen, Emmanuel, you know, I've been doing some experimenting, too. You know, I go to local board meetings of Pacifica and WBAI, and then I went to the National Pacifica board meeting this weekend. And I can't believe how, you know, there was a box in the folio, and it said that the National Board was meeting in New York City on last weekend. Do you understand what I mean? Now, naturally, it was meeting at some building, some hotel.
Do you want to tie this into what we're talking about?
Yes, of course, my dear. You are so clever. You know, your mind works in devious circles.
Look. Yes, my finger works even faster. Good morning. Good evening, rather.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Okay. 7-second delay caught me by surprise.
That's okay.
Three things. One, when you talk about meeting people on the loop, it just suddenly brought back nostalgic memories of People Express Airlines in their early startup days, where they had one, I think it was an 800 number to call them from wherever you were. And if you called the 800 number, you got put on hold and discovered that you could talk to all the other people all over who were also on hold. So I had charming talks with strangers in Toronto who were waiting to get on. And most people expressed regret when People Express got rid of that unexpected feature of their phone system.
That's a funny way you tie that in. Most people expressed regret. I like that.
Anyway, I have a question I've been meaning to ask you for a while. I've been frustrated. I work for New York City government, and we have a restrictive phone system, which means that most people are not allowed to call long distance, and those people who are, and I'm one of them, are given an authorization code, which you use to, which the system will then allow you to place long distance calls. However, what the system will not allow you to do, regardless of how authorized you are, is to dial the operator or to get any other long distance carrier through the 10, you know, like 10 AT&T.
That's a common problem, and there is a very simple fix to that. Unfortunately, the long distance companies don't see fit to maintain this program, but that's the 950 access numbers, basically toll-free numbers that give you dial tones, and then instead of billing back to the number you're calling from, you enter your own authorization code and make your long-distance call that particular way, and it gets billed to whatever phone number that authorization code belongs to. No surcharge, and quality just as good as a regular direct dial call. Doesn't really solve the problem of operator assistance, I realize.
Right. I don't know if you can then call it, if I could then call the 800 number for Sprint or MCI and then from there try to call a local operator. I'm not sure if it's possible to do that.
Well,
I have had some frustrating calls with AT&T about accessing their long-distance service through something other than 10 AT&T, and the people I get are confused by the question but assure me that it's absolutely impossible and there is no local.
No, that's
access.
Not true. It is absolutely possible. If you call 1-800-CALL-ATT, whatever numbers that translates to,
right,
you get the equivalent of making a zero-plus call. It'll say, hit this button for help making a zero-plus calls. It's meant to be used from payphones that don't allow that kind of thing. And what you do is you enter your calling card number and where you want to call to, and it it works just like you were doing zero-plus.
That's so interesting. I wonder why AT&T customer service doesn't want to give that information.
Well, we could speculate on that for quite some time, but I think it boils down to just general knowledge of how their own system works, which is very low right now.
Right, and one other thing that is tangential to what you're talking about. I have been fighting a two-year battle with New York Newsday to get them to stop calling me at home, which I consider harassment and they consider salesmanship.
Yeah, they keep asking why you don't want to subscribe, right?
Well, after I would get, for the brief period when I did subscribe and which I stopped in protest, when I would get calls to ask me to subscribe when I was already subscribing, I said, enough already.
Uh-huh.
And so I canceled my subscription, and I gave them the name, my name and my roommate's name, which is a different last name, and I gave them the phone number, and I said, do not ever call here again, ever. And they said, gotcha, we'll write it down, you will never be bothered. And then sometime later, I got one of their, you know, $4 minimum wage persons calling me, who didn't understand why I was upset, wouldn't identify himself, wouldn't get off the line, and hung up on me, so I had to call back to their bank of operators. And they pulled up their system, and sure enough, there was my name, there was my roommate's name, there was the phone number, and they said, you're right, we're not supposed to call you. Funny about that. And this Sunday, it happened again, and I was told by their director of sales, their manager of telemarketing sales, that they had just installed a new system, a computer system, of course, for Brooklyn. And he had made a decision personally that it was important to get the system up and running immediately, and he couldn't be bothered to have someone key punch all of the names and numbers of the people who are not to be called. They would do that later.
Well, definitely you should get that person's name. And
I have his name and number, and I have so far called the Telephone Annoyance Bureau, and they don't handle it, and I've called the Department of Consumer Affairs. I've called the New York Bar Association for a referral, and they don't handle these kinds of complaints. I've called the district attorney, and I've called the local police precinct, and
well,
I'm filing a complaint.
You should,
but
most definitely.
No one can actually tell me whether or not this is illegal, because they're not a collection agency, so Consumer Affairs can't handle it. They're not obscene. And so no, and they seem to feel that as long as it's done during reasonable hours, I didn't think 10 a.m. on a Sunday was reasonable. No one is quite sure at this point whether this is legal or not.
Uh-huh. It's something that is coming up quite a few different places. Some states have laws, but then again, the telemarketers get around that by calling from out of state. So there's, I don't think there's anything in a uniform kind of a state, you know, from coast to coast that applies. A couple of things that come to mind, though. First of all, this wouldn't apply to you, but for those people out there that consider this kind of thing, I understand that people that never subscribe never get phone calls. You have to subscribe once in order for them to have you in their database. That's just something I've heard.
I've seen Newsday.
Yeah, so it's something to keep in mind, and maybe if Newsday realizes that people aren't subscribing to them because they don't want to be harassed.
No, it's not the case for Newsday, because they have told me that they hire other companies that do demographer-type work, and they just buy lists of phone numbers.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm in a targeted area, they don't care that I've never subscribed. They will blanket the area the same way that they will pick an area and deliver the newspaper free for a week.
The other thing I would suggest is if you want to have fun with this, subscribe, and then don't pay your bill. And if you don't pay your bill, they're not going to bother you again because they're not going to like you.
I'll be a deadbeat. I've thought about that. Part of the reason I canceled the subscription is they couldn't figure out how to get into an apartment building, and they were in the habit of ringing the tenants at 6:30 in the morning to be let in to deliver the paper. And for my lifestyle, no paper is important enough.
I understand that.
I'm going the criminal route, and I'm going to try the public embarrassment route also. But it's just the other end of phone problems is being the receiver of unwanted calls rather than being locked out of wanting to call where and how you want to.
Yes, well, I sympathize with that, and I'd be very interested to know how that turns out in the future. Keep us advised.
I will indeed, and thanks for your show.
Okay, thanks for calling. And that also brings to mind a stupid mistake I made years ago, and it's a mistake that I don't think would be confused with what people do here at BAI, but there was this other station. I'll call it a TV station because that's what it was. I was having a fundraiser, and I decided to be a good-natured slob and call them and actually donate something. So I called their particular, it was an automated kind of a thing. They said, if you like this program, call this number now, and this will automatically be added to your phone bill. So I said, okay, I like that program, and, you know, it's only a few dollars, so I'll do that just to support them and to show my support. So I did. And the big mistake was that by doing that, my phone number, my private phone number, got registered with their computer. And now they're calling back all the time saying, won't you please re-donate? Give us something else. So think twice before you call one of those special numbers. And they could be 540 numbers, 900 numbers, even 800 numbers. They will get your phone number. Good evening.
Yes, is this the show,
yes.
The phone show?
It certainly is, and you're on the air now.
Oh, okay. I turned my radio down. You mentioned the radio change application that was filed by New York Telephone, and you say you're going to discuss it in more detail next week?
That's correct, yes.
Can you give me an idea of who your guests are? You said you had some expert guests.
Well, we don't know yet, and we can't say until we do know.
Oh, I see. In other words, you don't have anyone planned at this point.
Well, we have feelers out to a lot of different people, and we'll see who gets back to us and who wants to to comment on it.
I see. Okay. One other thing, you mentioned that they want to reduce the price on the touch-tone phones.
Uh huh. Well, no, it's not price on the phones. It's the quote unquote service.
Touch-tone service. The charge, I think, now is $1.35 a month for residential, and more than that for business. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, it's more for businesses. That much I do know.
I was wondering what you thought of the idea that they should be charging for rotary. Touch-tone should be free, and people who insist on keeping rotary, because of course, when you dial a number via the touch-tone route, it takes milliseconds, I guess.
Uh-huh.
The rotary route, you're taking a lot of time on the registration of the call.
You are taking more time. It's not significant, however, and I don't believe there's a need to charge anybody for using their phones.
Actually,
above and beyond.
Actually, that's what boils down to. The people who have touch-tone now are really doing the phone company a favor by making making the equipment work much
very true, and it's simply something that goes back to the early 60s, where people thought that touch tone was something new and improved, and it was back then, but now it's standard, so it should be treated as standard. Everybody seems to understand this except the phone company.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because my particular phone switch will be upgrading soon, and I'm going to be downgrading because they're going to have the ability to turn off touch tones for those people that refuse to pay the fee. So while we're moving into the modern age, we're actually moving backwards a step at the same time.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. By the way, I should point out, too, that there is, and I wish I had the actual location, but you can find out the location by calling a particular phone number. The State Consumer Protection Board is holding hearings tomorrow on various issues of privacy, things involving credit ratings, your credit information getting out. I imagine also your phone being called by all kinds of businesses. And that's being held downtown at the Consumer Protection Board office. The number to call for more information, 212-417-4908. That's the number that we have there, 212-417-4908. It will be starting, I believe, at noon, and people want to speak. They're going to have to wait until the people that already are registered to speak have spoken, which I believe is about 3:30 or 4. So, again, the number to call for more information on that, 212-417-4908. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. A couple of months ago, you did part of your program was devoted to this MCI family and friends plan that gives a discount to people who are enrolled who call numbers frequently.
Yeah, since then there's been an advertising campaign by other phone companies saying that basically what we said that night, that it's an invasion of your privacy to give out the private numbers of all your friends so that you can get discounts when you call them.
Right. Now, I wasn't paying close attention because it didn't affect me then, but now it does because a friend of mine who lives in San Francisco has put me down as a frequent caller. And she gets a 20% discount, I guess, when she calls me. Now my name is my name and number is listed somewhere, right?
That's right. In fact, we called that on the air, and back then the only password that was required to access a complete listing of all a particular person's friends and family was their zip code. If you knew somebody's zip code, you could hear all the phone numbers that they called. Now I think they've changed that so that it's the last four digits of their account number, which is just as easy to get.
Right, right.
So it's an invasion of your privacy, and you might want to explain that to your friend, that it's something that that you don't want to have attached to your number.
Yeah, I was called by MCI, too, because I'm on MCI, and they wanted to enroll me in this, but I wasn't ready to give out my friends' numbers.
Uh-huh. Well, a very simple way to get off that person's list is to switch long-distance companies, because then you'll no longer be eligible.
Right.
So switch to another long-distance company, and you'll be off the list and blacklisted for the rest of your life.
Okay. Well, one other thing, and this is short. On my bill, I got an AT&T call listed down there, and it was a third-party call. The bill to my number from Georgia, and I was never in Georgia,
uh-huh.
Calling to New York City. Now, when I called the operator about it, they deducted the cost of the call. But somebody out there, can I assume that somebody out there knows my number and is using it?
Is it AT&T?
AT&T, yeah.
All right, AT&T, was it a collect call or a calling card call?
Can't remember. It was a third party call where they gave this number as a billing number.
Okay, it sounds either like somebody guessed your calling card number, in which case you should get another one, no charge for that, or somebody perhaps made a third party call, which was basically they said, I want to bill to this particular number, and for some reason they believe them without confirming. Either way, though, you should get your calling card number changed, and either way, we're out of time. Thanks for the call. And thanks to everybody else who didn't get through, and thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back again next week talking about the rate increase. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. Good night.
I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse.
Monday.